Imagine you wake up in the United Kingdom, surrounding you white beaches, palm trees, and the deep blue sea. You enter your little boat and sail for around 1 hour. Once you've reached land again, it's the Netherlands now. You make your way to the Dutch airport, welcoming a friend of yours. And after some minutes driving in the cab, you and your friend cross another border. This time, the border to France.
Post-colonial Europe, looking at European identities from a different perspective. A podcast.
For all of this border crossing, you don't need a speedboat nor a rocket, and you also do not need to teleport yourself. Have you guessed it? We are in the Caribbean. Here, coral reefs and beautiful islands are still separated by European borders. The island of Saint-Martin, or rather Saint Martin, is split into a French and Dutch side, whilst the small neighboring island of Anguilla is part of the United Kingdom.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
With a referendum in 2016, the citizens of the UK made a profound decision. They decided to vote for Brexit. They voted for leaving the European Union. And although the citizens of Anguilla, more than 4,000 kilometres away from London, were not even allowed to vote in the Brexit referendum, the implications for the small island are potentially dramatic.
But stop, I don't get it. Why are these Caribbean islands even part of other countries? Countries that are situated in Europe, separated by the second largest ocean in the world. Are these islands colonies?
This seems like an odd question, doesn't it? A colonial empire stretching over the whole globe feels like an outdated and even anachronistic concept from the past. These empires are connected with Columbus, Cecil Rhodes, Lothar van Trotha, and other old white European men with their weird mustaches and their ridiculous uniforms. And colonial imperialism has to be seen for what it is, the instrument perpetrating cruel slavery and horrible exploitation, causing suffering and death for millions of people over centuries.
But this time is long gone, isn't it? Don't we live in a post-colonial period?
Well, as the Indian scholar Anya Lumba states, the period we are living in is frequently misunderstood as a post-colonial period, meaning the period after colonialism. But we should not think of post-colonialism in temporal terms. Instead, she calls it a constant constatation of colonial domination. This domination still exists in a variety of ways. White supremacy, that once was used by European colonialists to justify colonization and enslavement, neo-colonial economic relationships that exploit formerly colonized countries, as well as the existence of unequal political bonds between geographically distant regions within a state that stem from colonial time. This distance can be rather short, as for instance in the case of the United Kingdom that still governs Gibraltar in the Mediterranean, or Puerto Rico in the Caribbean, which belongs to the United States of America. But there are also a variety of cases where the political centers are far more separated from the dependent regions. Examples of this scenario are, for instance, French Guiana in South America, that is part of France, or Greenland, which belongs to Denmark. But is it correct to speak of these territories as colonies? Dr. Manuela Boatka, professor for sociology at the University of Freiburg, who is working in the field of post-colonial and decolonial theory, has the following to say.
It's always a question of debate, but I would say with a short answer, yes, colony is the correct terminology, mostly because most of the relationships that have characterized the dependency between these territories and European states or the US have not changed since these territories were colonized. So the fact that the language changes reflects rather a political wish to represent relationships in a different way and to claim that there has been a thorough break with the colonial past, which most of the time is not the case.
All right, but was not there a special committee at the United Nations responsible for the dissolving of colonies? I thought they would be done by now. How many such territories do still exist? It wouldn't be many, right?
Well, there is a special committee at the United Nations, namely the Committee on Decolonization, or also known as Committee of 24. And surely after almost 60 years of its existence, one might be inclined to think that they are close to finished with their task. The committee is responsible for reviewing the official list of non-self-governing territories. This list currently includes 17 such territories. One of them is, for instance, Anguilla. But one might argue that the list is far from complete.
So there are also other territories that can be considered a colony?
Answering this is a bit complicated. Territories, which could be considered colonies because of their different geography, history, and current administrative status, are very diverse. In order to see through this territory chaos, it is helpful to look at the different administrative statuses of the colonies. Simplifying it, these statuses can be divided into two sections. Fully integrated and not fully integrated into the mainland country. While the fully integrated regions have the same status as any other federal district of the country, not fully integrated regions range from almost fully politically included into the mainland country to highly autonomous and almost independent. Examples for these are French Guiana or La Réunion. Not fully integrated territories, such as St. Martin in the Caribbean or Guam in the Pacific Ocean, are often also separated geographically from the mainland. St. Martin, as a constituent country of the Kingdom of the Netherlands, has a variety of autonomies. It has a separated parliament, and the Netherlands are only responsible for foreign diplomacy and defense. Guam, as an organized unincorporated territory of the United States, is less autonomous. They also have a parliament and seats in the US House of Representatives, but their representatives do not have the right to vote, and the US Congress can overturn any vote that is being held in Guam. Further, the US denied Guam citizens the request for more autonomies by becoming a US Commonwealth like Puerto Rico. It is possible to say that almost every territory has a different administrative status due to the individual treaties with the associated mainland country and a shared history.
This sounds awfully confusing to me.
Yes, I know, but let us think of the example of Anguilla again. Maybe the small island can illustrate what makes the relationship between the former colonial powers and the overseas territory so complex. In order to understand the political situation in Anguilla, we first have to get to grips with its colonial history. After all, Anguilla is one of Britain's oldest colonies. Before we delve into this part of history, it is important to state that humans have lived for thousands of years on Anguilla. Traces of human life can be dated back to around 1300 BC, so quite a long time before any European colonial settler ever set foot on Caribbean islands. Having this in mind, we can maybe begin to grasp the substantial disruption that is about to unfold as Europeans set out to conquer.
In 1492, Christopher Columbus arrived on one of the islands that today belong to the Bahamas. His journey marked the beginning of the Spanish invasion of the Americas. Since then, the Caribbean also gained importance for other European powers. It was understood to be something like the Achilles heel of the Spanish, because many sea routes to its colonies on the American continent had to sail past the Caribbean islands. Soon enough, it was one of the main locations for disputes between the European countries engaged in colonialism at that time. Spain, England and the Netherlands, France and in some cases even Denmark, wanted to show their political presence in the Caribbean. In the first phase of Caribbean colonization, many private actors were involved in the disputes over territory. Pirates, adventurers, Protestants and merchants gathered there to make their fortune in the so-called New World. Later on, the struggle for territory became increasingly relevant for the colonial powers because the Caribbean islands appeared in their eyes to be a place to very efficiently implement capitalist structures on plantations. The colonial powers wanted to use the Caribbean colonies for agriculture and trade in the proceeds. Sugar, cane, cotton, and tobacco plantations were established. In order to allow for their exploitation of the Caribbean islands, they enslaved and displaced thousands of Africans, forcing them to work on their plantations. At that time, the European colonizers had already nearly killed the local Caribbean population. Many died not just at the hands of European soldiers in warlike conflicts, but also from diseases such as measles, brought from across the Atlantic. By 1650, Anguilla was officially claimed by the British Crown, thus making it one of the earliest British colonies. The small island was never really usable for agriculture due to its unfavorable soil and climatic conditions. Since the island's natural resources are limited to fish, lobster, and salt, Anguilla was dependent on working trade relations with other islands or countries from early on. Under the colonial rulers, the island's salt in particular was used for export.
This dependency of Anguilla is, of course, an important note also for today's political situation of Anguilla and its relations with the United Kingdom.
Yes, I've heard that the Anguillans even have to import drinking water.
That's right. In order to better understand the current relation between the UK and Anguilla, we'll have to have a look onto the more recent shared history. From the mid-20th century onwards, disputes have been mounting about how the political situation in Anguilla should develop.
In 1882, the British colonial powers formed the Federation of St. Kitts, Nevis, Anguilla. In other words, a union of the neighbouring islands of St. Kitts, Nevis and Anguilla. Since 1967, the Federation was granted the status associated state, with a considerable degree of self-government. To put it mildly, the Anguillans did not exactly appreciate this federation, not least because of the dominant role of St. Kitts in it. So the Anguillans complained to the colonial rulers twice, and in 1967, after both of their requests to leave the Federation were ignored by the UK, there was an uprising on the small island. The locals demanded their independence as a British overseas territory with no connection to the neighbouring islands. When no answer came from London, the Anguillans declared their political independence from Great Britain. This went too far for the British and they sent troops to Anguilla. The rebellion ended without war and the British granted the Anguillans their independence from St. Kitts and Nevis. However, it was not until 1980 that the Federation was actually abolished.
Okay, that brings us to the end of our little historical excursion. Meanwhile, St. Kitts and Nevis have gained full independence from the United Kingdom, and Anguilla is still a dependent territory of the UK. In 2002, Anguilla became a British overseas territory. With this change, the people of Anguilla gained further autonomies.
Further autonomies? That sounds rather dry again. What changed for the Anguillans?
Before 2002, the citizens of the British Overseas Territories, or rather dependent territories, as they were called until then, held a separate citizenship than the population of the British Isles. But with the renaming of the territories into overseas territories, the British Nationality Act was overwritten. Now, anyone who held a British dependent territory citizenship was granted full British citizenship, and with that, a British passport for international travel. Only with this full citizenship, they could enter and stay indefinitely in the UK without going through immigration, become a member of the police or armed forces, and most importantly, exercise their rights under the Human Rights Act that implemented the European Convention on Human Rights. By virtue of being now a British citizen and the UK still being part of the European Union, they were also granted all the liberties connected with a EU citizenship.
But this citizenship does not include self-determination, doesn't it? So why is Anguilla still not independent?
Let's hear what Manuela Botka thinks why the way into independence is often more complex than it seems, and why, in some cases, independence is not even desirable for the locals.
The complex situation that a colonized territory finds itself in after several hundred years of colonialism would not be solved by a mere administrative juridical decision. Scholars of the Caribbean have called this flag independence. You basically have a national independence day to celebrate, you have your own flag, you have your own passport, but that's it. And especially for a small territory, which also means in economical terms, a small market, you don't have a lot of space to kind of have your products distributed. Your trade partners and your entire economic structure has for hundreds of years been oriented towards the metropole, towards the colonial power. So basically declaring independence would first of all create more problems than it would solve.
Now I get it. The financial or economic dependency puts Anguilla into a situation without back and forth. Therefore, Brexit and its potential consequences for the economy must have been so frightening.
Yes, that's right. While Anguilla is not involved in trade with Europe directly, European borders still run right outside their front door. We already know that just a few nautical miles away from Anguilla, the French and Dutch island of Saint Martin lies. So far, the dependencies on different European countries had not hindered free movement within the territories. Families living on both islands would visit each other on a regular basis and therefore needed special medical treatment or something was not available on Anguilla, one could simply take the ferry over to Saint Martin. This close relationship was especially important in times of crisis, like during the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. But we already know that it was not a natural catastrophe that should endanger the special bond between the two islands.
Good morning, everyone. The country has just taken part in a giant democratic exercise, perhaps the biggest in our history. The British people have voted to leave the European Union, and their will must be respected.
So David Cameron, the then Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, forgot in his statement that the British people also includes the population in the British Overseas Territories.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The Anguillan locals were not allowed to vote in the referendum. Cameron's ignorance with regards to the UK Overseas Territories seems to coincide with the perception that many people on the British Isles have of Anguilla. Namely, none at all. Many struggle to even relate to the name Anguilla.
I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not familiar with the word Anguilla. It sounds kind of familiar, and if I had to guess, I'd say it would be maybe a country. But I don't really know for sure, so there's nothing that I associate with it.
I have no idea what, where, or who Anguilla is, but it makes me think of an alcoholic drink, or maybe an island off the coast of Italy.
Whilst Anguilla is neither located in the Mediterranean nor officially in the EU, they are, according to Manuela Buerca, at least as much affected by the Brexit as Northern Ireland, if not even more.
In the case of Anguilla, this is even a more dramatic impact than any kind of debates and descriptions we've seen with regard to, let's say, Ireland or even Gibraltar, which were very much more in the news for being on the European continent. Whereas the fact that Anguilla borders the EU territory of Saint-Martin, which is part of France, and the territory of Saint-Martin, which is one of these constituent countries of the Kingdom of the Netherlands, would impact Anguilla's citizens' access to medical services. There's no access to postal services outside of access to France. There's no access to a airport outside of the access to the Dutch territory. There were several petitions from Anguillan representatives to Theresa May at that point, and then to Boris Johnson to take this into account in negotiations, and that didn't happen.
But what's the perspective of Anguillans on the Brexit negotiations? Getting hold of anybody from Anguilla for an interview was unfortunately not possible. Therefore, we have to rely on excerpts from interviews that Nisha Dupuy, a Caribbean broadcaster and media personality, recorded in November 2018 for a documentary by Channel 4. She spoke to several locals to understand the fear of Brexit. Let's hear what Felix Fleming, a playwright and local theatre owner, told her.
Anguilla and St. Martin is like brother and sister, or brother and brother. You know, it's we depend on each other.
Do you feel that in light of all of this, Anguillans should have been consulted?
At least we would have been treated as human beings, like people recognize that we are here, you know, and that our lives value something.
So there was little enthusiasm towards the idea of leaving the European Union, since the potential dire consequences were more than obvious to everyone on the island. It would not only put limits on the free movement of people and goods, but also exclude the island from further fundings by the European Union, which has been the biggest contributor to annual financial aid programs for the development and rebuilding of the community on Anguilla after Hurricane Irma. However, the interest in the British-European negotiations appears to have dwindled after more than 4 years of uncertainty. Now that 2 years have passed since the recording of this documentary, do we know how the actual Brexit deal is going to influence Anguillans?
Well, so far, there actually has not been a deal for Anguilla. The territorial scope of the Brexit deal states specifically that it does not apply to overseas territories that have special relations with the United Kingdom. That means that they will continue trading goods with Europe on a third country basis, but since they are no longer related to the European Union through the United Kingdom, they will lose the tariff and quota-free access to the EU member states market. In other words, importing goods from and exporting them to the EU will now cost significantly more. But how this and other consequences of the Brexit are implemented is unclear. There are few official documents available that address changes. Manuela Buatka agrees.
I was at a loss as to what has been negotiated because nothing has. It wasn't really officially discussed. So I was trying to find out from the Anguillan side. I was following their documents and publications, and they had made several systematic efforts to have that addressed and to have that actually solved on their own side. Now, of course, we know there has been a last minute Brexit deal, which did not address Anguilla. And I've been following up with contacts in Anguilla who've for now reported that there hasn't been any apparent change. So nobody touches the previous agreements and people still travel. But of course, legally, it's a very gray zone because it'd be possible for someone to say, you know what, starting today, I'm starting to enforce what is actually the rule, which is that this is a border and let's include or let's introduce passport checks. And that would be legal. So it's a very precarious situation and it would have been much better to have some sort of legal agreement.
With the Brexit negotiations being dragged out even further for the Anguillans and more recent problems like the COVID-19 pandemic or Hurricane Irma at hand, it might be understandable why many just want to be done and over with it. Anguilla and the neighboring communities of Saint-Martin and Saint-Martin might even be able to find some independence in their own handling of Brexit in the absence of any substantial progress from across the Atlantic. But the colonial dependency on the United Kingdom will for now, with the lost access to the European Union, only deepen and thus further complicate efforts for independence. Anguilla finds itself caught up in its colonial disposition, carrying the burden of international politics that are being played by European states that do not understand the realities their interventions abroad have created. This becomes especially apparent in the Brexit referendum, where Anguillan's lack of political self-determination indicates the continuation of colonial power structures in a belief post-colonial era.